Blog Talk Radio.
Erie House Radio is brought to you by the letter A and the number 13.
Hey, we got a letter for you. Good evening, and welcome to Erie House Radio. I'm one of your postmen, or postpersons, Dale Kay from Spook Show. Here along with...
One that's not underwater, Dave Binkley from Weirdest Really Bad Movie, and Spaceship One, and the Postmaster General is...
That would be CW. Yes, thank you very much. CW, the letter carrier extraordinaire.
Yep,
she's carrying all the way to the mailbox. Yep.
I may have to call me again.
Yeah, you might have to. Yeah.
Yeah, so it seems Dale is under the deep blue sea. Are you delivering? delivering that important post to James Cameron, James Cameron of the Titanic, and Don Knotts of the Mr. Limpid down there under the sea.
What?
Wow.
Someone ringing?
Oh, what
could it be?
Hello, me? It's me.
Uh-oh. Doppelganger.
Uh-oh.
Doppelganger.
I always worried about Dale and his split personalities.
I never realized there was enough room for the one. Bazinga.
Bazinga. Got me. I deserve that.
You know what's interesting is, you know, how people are fussing how the price of mail keeps going up and up and up and up and up and up and up. Where the price of a first-class letter is 58 cents. It does seem a bit much, except in Australia it's 77 cents. Japan, 73 cents. Canada, 84 cents. Germany, 95 cents. United Kingdom, $1.14 for a first-class stamp. In France, $1.85. And in Italy, it's $3.12 for a first-class stamp, but I think you get a meatball with that.
Yeah.
Oh, at least, yes.
And you get an escort through the town of Corleone.
Yes. You make you an offer you can't refuse.
Yep.
Oh, my.
And we are delivering yet once again with CBS Radio Mystery Theater tonight.
Yeah, interesting tale. I don't want to give it away. I don't want to give it away because it's a fun, interesting story. We'll just do it this. They find a letter in the post office when they move something that should have been delivered 40 years ago and try to deliver it. How's that?
Sounds about right. It's time. Actually, it's only improved.
Yep. Could be.
Almost lost our segments. Our show tonight, postage due.
Yeah. I have a couple postal stories to share tonight.
Ooh,
one about Abraham Lincoln, and one about Oni the Postal Dog.
Ooh. I got to hear about the Postal Dog.
Yes.
Oh, you
got to
hear about the Postal Dog?
Yes.
We do have it here. Is in the autumn day in 1888, a shaggy pup took his first steps towards becoming a postal legend when he crept into Albany, New York, post office. There you go. Fogs Bane, that's for you. Postal employees allowed him to stay and named him Oni. At first, Oni stayed close to the post office, but soon he began riding mail wagons to the train depot and then rode the railway car down to New York and back to Albany. As Oney traveled farther, his friends at the Albany post office feared he might wander too far away to find his way home again. So they purchased a leather collar with a tag reading Oney, Post Office, Albany, New York. Railway mail clerks recorded Oney's travels by attaching metal baggage tags to his collar to identify the rail lines he traveled on. He was soon weighed down by his collection of tags. Postmaster General John Wanamaker presented Oney with a little jacket to distribute their weight more evenly. Oney took to traveling farther and staying away longer, eventually visiting Mexico, Canada, Japan, China, Singapore, Suez, Algiers, and the Azores. While being off to an Ohio newspaper reporter, while being shown off to an Ohio newspaper reporter, Oney bit the clerk who was handling him. The postmaster had Oney put down on June 11th, 1897. Well, at that point, he was 9 years old.
Grumpy
railway
old man.
And mail clerks chipped in money to have a taxidermist preserve Oney's body, which then was sent to postal headquarters in Washington, D.C. for exhibit. In 1911, the post office department entrusted Oney to the Smithsonian Institution. Since 1993, Oney has been part of the National Postal Museum in Washington, D.C. In 2011, Oney was honored with a commemorative U.S. postage stamp. And that is the story of Oney, the postal dog.
Hey. I thought a postal dog is a dog who doesn't get his treats. He goes postal.
Well, it looks like Oney did go a bit postal on the postmaster.
Yeah.
on the one clerk anyway, yeah. You know, dogs are a good choice of character, though. You know. So
they are.
True.
Dogs are smart.
I'm surprised someone didn't decide, let's taxidermist that pony for the Pony Express. Roy Rogers could do it, so can we.
There you go. Oh, my.
The worst thing was when Dale Rogers did it to Roy Rogers. That was a little rougher.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Good for Dale.
Well, what they did to, what's his name with the head in the bucket? Ted Williams.
Oh, Ted Williams, yeah.
Or something.
Or, well, he did that on Simpsons anyway.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, they always preserve the heads, and they had the head museum. You can go visit people in the head museum. They had Nixon and all the Star Trek people. And
that sounds like fun. Well, we're not going to send them a letter, but we're going to deliver one to you from CBS Radio Mystery Theater. This one's from later, from what, 1981, Dave?
1981, yeah. Went off the air in 82, but this was in 1981. Actually, episode 1,227. How's that?
There you go.
Wow.
We'll be back after part one.
Come in. Welcome. I'm E.G. Marshall. The eternal optimist is often ridiculed for his hopeful vision, his lofty ideals, and his unrealistic advice. Consider the optimistic cliche, it's never too late, or better late than never. Is that always the case? Or do some occasions exist where we might fare better with a more negative piece of advice? Leave well enough alone, for example.
We could find that money. Thousands of dollars. You could even have half.
Adolf, bribery is a crime.
Oh, give me the letter. I am the one she trusted. I helped her get away with
it. Put down those scissors. Drop them. Adolf, if I hear from you one more time, it won't be the post office you're dealing with. It'll be the police.
Our mystery drama, Postage Due, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Douglas Dempsey and stars Ralph Bell. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
Start your mornings with a double dose of laughter on CBS television, beginning with the Jeffersons.
Me and her been through some hard times together, and ain't another woman in this world who will stick by me the way she has.
You ain't lying.
The laughs continue with Alan.
Yeah! Keep on trapping!
And then...
here's the first item up for bids, and the price is right.
Join Bob Barker and... for an hour of excitement and fabulous prizes, it's the Jefferson, Alice, and the Price is Right. Weekdays on CBS television.
What do doctors recommend to avoid constipation? These days, doctors stress the importance of fiber in the diet. Food fiber that helps the system regulate itself naturally. Metamucil is the laxative made from natural fiber. No chemical stimulants. So for occasional constipation, doctors recommend Metamucil more often than any other laxative. Read label and follow directions. And now save up to a dollar when you buy Metamucil. Look for coupons in the July Reader's Digest. A railroad car clatters through Pennsylvania's coal fields almost a century ago. Its only passenger, a doctor named Matthew Shields, beginning a 16-year special assignment for the American Red Cross. In railroad yards, on sidings, and in the great terminals, Dr. Shields would convert his home on wheels into a classroom and teach first aid and occupational safety to industrial America. And all along the way, local physicians were enlisted as Red Cross volunteers to continue the teaching effort. When the car rolled to a stop for the last time, 2 million people had learned first aid. The effort was called a good beginning, but only a beginning. Today, as the Red Cross begins its second century, we're proud that America still looks to us for first aid training. Now we teach over 3 million people every year, and we still say it's only a beginning. Red Cross, ready for a new century. Consider for a moment the postman's creed. Neither snow, nor rain, nor heat, nor gloom of night stays these couriers from the swift completion of their appointed rounds. Bad weather is one thing, but sometimes even bigger obstacles can lie in the path of our friendly mailman. How far does his duty extend? To the point of personal hazard? To the point of actual danger? Examine the case of Mr. George McCready, mailman, whose route is the south side in the town of Smallville.
Say, George, I got a surprise for you in today's load. A surprise from the postmaster? You're notifying me of a raise in salary, huh?
No. Something for you to deliver. A letter, postmarked August 1st, 1941.
Come on.
No, really, I'm serious. They finally tore out the old wooden mail chute and they found this letter stuck in it.
Since 1941? Oh, boy, that must be some kind of record.
Yeah, thought you'd get a kick out of it being on your route and all. Here it is. It's got a 3-cent stamp on it.
3 cents? Those were the days.
Yeah.
So, what's the address? 507 South Market Street. 507? No one's lived in that place for years.
Hey, wait a minute. Not that house all the kids say is haunted.
Yeah, that's the one. I don't even deliver the junk mail there anymore. It's all overgrown.
Well, look, if you want, I'll turn it over to the dead letter office.
Oh, no way. After all this build-up, you think I'm not going to try and deliver it? You know the slogan, neither snow nor rain nor gloom of night. It's my duty. To Mr. Leon Winters from P.J. Moriarty. Well, at least there's a return address. Maybe I'll uncover something.
Just as long as you don't uncover anything haunted.
Listen, the only frightening thing about this job is the backache I go home with every night. 507 South Market. Well, what do you know? A car in the driveway. Must be someone here after all. I should have left my bag at the curb. It's a regular nature hike here. Hello? Anybody in there? Mailman. Hi. Somebody upstairs. It's the mailman. Hey. Who's in there? I've got a letter. I'm here, out front.
Yes?
Huh? Oh. You live here?
No, I'm the owner. Just trying to stay ahead of the vandalism. Come in.
Well, this place looks pretty good inside. I figured I'd find a real mess. Why don't you rent this place out?
Nobody wants... no one would want to live here. It's not really fit. So what brings you here?
I've got a letter to deliver.
I haven't used this address in years. Must be some old-timer trying to reach me.
Oh, real old-timer. It's postmarked 1941. We found it stuck in an old mail chute down at the post office.
1941? The whole family was here back then. Who's it to?
It's addressed to Mr. Leon Winters.
Leon?
You know him?
Yes. Yes, of course. He's... Well, he's me. I just haven't gone by that name in such a long time.
Well, I bet this brings back some memories. You couldn't have been much more than 20 when it was written.
I was 17 in 1941. Who could it be from?
Mr. Winters, before I turn it over to you as a kind of formality, I'd like to see some identification, a driver's license or something.
I don't have my wallet with me.
I'd hate to give this to the wrong person after 40 years and all.
Listen, I'm not really Leon. Leon was my older brother, but he's dead now. I'm Elroy Winters, and I am executor of the family estate, so...
Well, that does complicate things a bit.
If I have an identification for Elroy Winters, right here...
No, it's not that, Mr. Winters. If this other Mr. Winters, Leon, that is, has passed away, then I should try to return this letter to its sender.
And who's that?
A P.J. Moriarty.
P.J.? All right. That must be Pamela. Well, you won't have any luck finding her, Mr.
McCready, George McCready.
Miss McCready. She had some connection with Leon years ago, but she dropped out of sight, and he never heard from her again.
Well, nonetheless, I think I'd better try to return the address and see what I find.
That would be Cliff Manor, one of those mansions over on Society Hill.
Oh, that's right. 1540 Society Hill.
I think you'll be wasting your time. That family moved away long ago. Listen, Mr. McCready, this letter may have something to do with my brother's estate. A lot of financial matters were never cleared up.
I can understand your anxiety, sir, but postal regulations dictate my course. Here, this is my boss's number. Call if you can give me any leads, and I'll get back to you if I reach a dead end. Fair enough?
Bit overzealous, aren't you, McCready? Your regulations should hardly apply to a letter that's 40 years late.
May I help you?
Yes, I've got a letter here that I'm returning to sender, a P.J. Moriarty.
Oh, goodness, no. The Moriartys haven't lived here for ages. They were the original owners.
I must try to locate a Pamela.
Yes, yes. Well, you might try Adolph, the old groundskeeper. He stays out back in the cottage beyond the kennels.
Thank you.
Good day, sir.
Excuse me. You wouldn't be Adolph, would you?
I wouldn't be if I had a choice. But yes, I am Adolph. Head me down off this ladder.
Okay.
You're really too old for this.
Well, you're lucky to be doing something useful.
I'm not useful. I've been put out to pasture. I take care of these hedges only because I want to.
Well, you do a nice job. I came here to ask about the Moriartys. Did you know them?
Did I know them? They hired me. Back then, I ran the whole place, not this puny little flower patch. They sold the place in 46 and I stayed on. Been through 5 owners now. I come with the house.
Do you know any way I can reach them?
It's not likely, young fella. They all split up. Had big money problems after the war ended. Not too little money, mind you. Too much of it. They all went their separate ways, and that was that.
What about Pamela J. Moriarty?
Pamela? Little Pamela? She was an angel. I was always set on her. But, of course, nothing ever happened. Say, what are you after coming here and coaxing an old man out of his memories? You some kind of a cop?
No. I'm just a mailman trying to deliver a letter.
Well, the box is around front.
Well, you don't understand. It's an old letter from Pamela to a Mr. Leon Winters.
From Pamela? Mr. No one has heard from Pamela in 40 years. She's dead that long.
Well, that's that. She's dead. He's dead. End of the line.
Well, this Leon, he is dead, is he?
Or so his brother says. Why, you knew him?
No, I don't recall. Listen, mister, you cannot return this letter to Pamela and you say this Mr. Leon is dead. So maybe you ought to leave the letter here with me.
Oh? Why is that?
Well, I do hear from the family now and again.
Well, if a Moriarty comes calling, you should put them in touch with me.
But I don't know when I would hear from them. They check up on me. I can't reach them.
I'm sorry, Adolph, but I'm going to hold on to this envelope for now. Here's my number. If you hear from the family, I'd like to meet them. All right?
I don't think you want to meet the Moriartys, mister. They can be a cruel bunch. And if that letter is something important, something they want, they'd get it.
Just tell them to call me.
That you, George? Oh, hello, dear.
Don't even ask, Martha. The answer is yes. Your TV magazine has arrived. Here it is.
Oh, good. You know, it's an unfair life being the mailman's wife.
How so?
Well, I'm the first to see my husband leave in the morning and the last to get my mail in the evening.
You think you've got problems? I got a piece of mail here so overdue you can't imagine.
Oh, are you in trouble?
Oh, no, it's not my fault. We found an old letter in the sorting room chute, dated 1941.
How exciting! Who's it for? Did you deliver it?
I'll tell you the whole story. Just let me sit down first,
Is it a personal letter or business?
Funny you should ask. That seems to be the big question. Everyone seems to think it's going to solve their financial matters. Here, take a look for yourself.
Oh, my. August 1st, 1941. Well, it's in a woman's hand. Just look at those flourishes. Oh, I'll bet my button box it's personal. Did you find this Leon Winters?
I didn't find anybody. Apparently, addressee and sender are both dead. I went to the address, 507 South Market, that old house, you know?
Oh, yes. Lots of stories about that place. Our kids all swore the place was haunted.
Well, it's not haunted now. Just not rented. I met the owner. Weird duck. First he tells me he's Leon, then he tells me he's Elroy, Leon's younger brother, that Leon is dead.
He's trying to hide something?
Oh, I don't think so. It was just after the letter. And then I got the same song and dance from her side.
Her?
Yes, Pamela. She's the P.J. Moriarty.
Pamela? Were they lovers?
Oh, maybe, but let me finish here. The best I can figure, this guy Leon was using this rich girl, Pamela, to get money. Then he finally left town and she died. It's really too confusing. I'm afraid I'll just have to turn the letter in, that's all.
Oh, no. Let's look at it first.
What? Open mail? I'd lose my job, no matter what the letter said.
Well, you can't just give it up.
Oh, I shouldn't even have it now. Just seemed like a challenge to try. But I've done all I can for today. Let's eat dinner. It's 9:30. Time for sleep.
So, what about the letter, dear?
All right. I'll see what I can find out tomorrow. Enough is enough.
Let's get some sleep. Okay, Martha?
Right, George. Good night. Oh, my goodness. Who on earth could that be?
Hello.
Give the letter to its rightful owner, George. No harm will come to you. But deliver it soon.
Who?
George, who was it? What's wrong? George?
Is this nocturnal phone call the Moriarty threat? Or is it Elroy trying to claim his brother's long-lost paperwork? Perhaps there's someone else who wants the letter. And perhaps George's sense of duty is a bit extreme, just as Elroy warned. We shall expand on all of this in Act Two.
Now, True Value Hardware Stores are offering a hedge trimmer that cuts two ways, with a cord and without. Hi, Pat Summerall to tell you you can use the Diston lightweight dual power trimmer with a cord and it'll recharge itself as it works. Or use it without a cord to trim shrubs in hard-to-reach places, far from an outlet. And for cordless convenience, when you trim grass, get the Diston rechargeable grass shears with coated blades for fast non-stick cutting. You'll find them both at participating True Value Hardware stores and home centers.
Feeling good, feel so good, firming up the way, you know you should.
I'm Susan Anton. The ultimate in feeling fit is sleeping on a perfect sleeper pillow soft. Extra thick comfort on top and ultra firm support inside. Perfect sleeper pillow soft.
Feel perfect sleeper.
A healthy investment in yourself.
This is Gene King for your Better Business Bureau. The new game seems to be the electronic one. Video and portable electronic games have suddenly taken hold. And the Better Business Bureau offers this advice. Do a lot of comparison shopping because costs vary both with complexity and with the manufacturer. Play a wide variety of games, too. And find out which ones you prefer, and then read your warranty carefully. Most electronic games come with limited warranties, but some don't. If yours doesn't, check out the store's repair and exchange policies. The availability of repairs should play an important part in your choice, as should the additional expenses of different so-called software packages. But most importantly, buy your game from a reputable dealer, where you can count on the staff's knowledge and service. A tip from your Better Business Bureau.
Hey, here we go.
Here we go.
As we wrapped up part one of CBS Radio Mystery Theater.
We did. And it's just... The adventure is just beginning.
Yep.
I'm liking this. Is someone in an echo chamber?
I'm killing one of my microphones off, so eliminate that.
Yeah. There you go. Actually, he was underwater in a different way, right? Yeah. Two presidents actually had worked for the post office, believe it or not. One was Harry Truman, and the other one, believe it or not, was Abraham Lincoln.
What?
On May 7th, 1833, really? A 24-year-old Abraham Lincoln was appointed postmaster of New Salem, Illinois. Lincoln served until the office was closed May 30th of 1836. On May 7th, 1833, the 24-year-old Lincoln, oh, there we got that. Okay, they repeated that. How fun. Postal records show that Lincoln earned $55.70 as postmaster in the fiscal year, 1835, and $19.48 for one quarter's work in fiscal year 1837. Besides his pay, Lincoln as postmaster could send and receive personal letters free and get one daily newspaper delivered free. Mail arrived once a week. If an addressee did not collect the mail, as was the custom, Lincoln delivered it personally, usually carrying the mail in his hat. Even then, Lincoln was Honest Abe. Reportedly, when the New Salem Post Office was discontinued, Lincoln had a balance of $16 or $18, which he took with him to Springfield, Illinois. Months later, while his close friend, Dr. G.A. Henry, was visiting, a post office agent called on Lincoln to collect the funds. Now, Henry knew that Lincoln had been in financial straits and feared that he might not have the money. Henry recalled, just as he was about to offer Lincoln a loan, the future president went to his trunk at the boarding house and returned with an old blue sock with a quantity of silver and copper coin tied up in it. Untying the sock, he poured the contents on the table and proceeded to count the coin, which consisted of such silver and copper pieces as the country people were then in the habit of using in paying postage. On counting it up, it was found the exact amount to the cent of the draft and in the identical coin which had been received. He had never used, under any circumstance, trust funds. So there you go. Honest Abe.
Honest Abe.
Abe. Ah, dear. Wonder if he was carrying the mail in that stovepipe hat, or was that fashionable yet? That would save a lot.
I don't know. It depends on how much mail he had, I guess, right?
Yeah, there you go.
Stack it right up.
Functional arrow.
There you go.
Yeah. Oh, like you really need something to make him tall.
Eerie house radio.
All kinds of fun going on. And even though we didn't give it earlier, before we get into part two, this is from July 29th of 1981, just so that everybody knows.
Thank you.
Ah.
Well done.
Here we go. Part two of Postage Due.
Yes.
Postman George McCready has committed the working man's cardinal sin. He has taken his work home with him. In this case, it's a letter overdue by 38 years. He won't rest until it's delivered. But should he continue to endure threats, insinuations, even midnight phone calls? For once, perhaps, George may be taking his job too seriously. And that can be dangerous. We join him now as he pays a second visit to the old Moriarty mansion.
Come in.
Hello, Adolph. It's the mailman, George McCready.
Watch it. Don't step on those clippings. I'm sorting through my old scrapbooks.
It looks like the National Archives in here.
So, you've decided to give me that letter after all?
No, quite the opposite. I came to warn you. Lay off the threats and phone calls.
What do you mean?
I got a midnight phone call demanding the letter. Who was it? One of those tough Moriartys you threatened me with?
Oh, believe me, I have contacted no one.
Now, listen, Adolph. I was trying to do my job yesterday. Today I'm here on my own to tell you that I intend to turn the letter in.
Oh, no, please, don't do that. If you give it to the authorities, you will be passing up a big opportunity. I am convinced that it is the key to a large sum of money, and if we can recover it, well, there might be a nice reward.
That would be bribery. You forget, sir, you're dealing with the United States Mail.
Well, maybe if I told you the whole story...
Why should I take your word? You're obviously hiding something.
What about these newspapers? Isn't their word good enough? Look, here, in my scrapbooks, all these clippings about the Moriartys. This book holds 30 years of family history.
And family scandals, no doubt.
Don't judge them so harshly. They didn't ask for fame. Especially little Pamela. She hated the family's reputation. Here she is, age 16. Her first debutante ball.
Hmm. She is striking.
More than striking, she was different. Intelligent.
So, what happened?
This is her engagement photo, 1941. She was set up to marry this banker. That's when she met Leon, who is, as you know, the name on that letter.
So you did know Leon Winters, huh?
Yeah, sure. A nice boy. Only he couldn't show his face around here. He came from the south side.
I know the south side. That's my route.
Ah, then you know the problem. The wrong side of the tracks, as they say. Pamela loved him all right. And since I was fond of her, I had to meet and...
Like Romeo and Juliet. So what happened? They ran away, right?
Not so fast. Leon would have liked that, but not Pamela. If she were to run away with a poor boy, the family would have disowned her, cut her off without a dime.
Uh-huh. Enter the villain. Money.
Well, there was a trust fund in her name, and she wasn't about to let the family get hold of that.
So Leon had to wait around until she was old enough to get the trust fund. Hmm?
And that's where things began to fall apart. You remember, this was 1941. It was fairly certain that America would soon be at war.
And, Leon will be drafted.
Right. So he was impatient. He wanted Pamela to forget her fortune and marry him. But she just couldn't leave all that money behind.
You mean she said no to him?
She hesitated. But that was enough. The next thing she knew, Leon had joined the Marines.
Oh, that's too bad. But you still haven't explained why some old love letter could be so important.
Now, be patient. Once Leon went off to war, that's when the scandal, as you call it, began. The shock of his being gone, really gone, brought Pamela to her senses. And so she ran off to join him with the money.
With what money?
Her trust fund. She met secretly with the family lawyers and convinced them to give her the cash. It was an enormous amount, hundreds of thousands.
She talked the lawyers and
tricked them into it. She was a smart girl. And she packed up, bought a passage to Hawaii, and took off. She probably meant to meet Leon there.
Incredible. She took the money and ran. And then what?
Then... that is the end.
What do you mean?
Her ship went down in the Pacific. They never found her or the money.
Oh, that's terrible. Poor Leon.
Oh, I doubt he ever knew. He died, too, in the war.
So, that was that, huh?
Except for the money. She left with only one small suitcase, so everyone figured she must have hidden the cash somewhere before she left.
And you figure this letter is the treasure map, telling Leon where the stash is hidden.
See, it must be. No other letter was ever found, no clues. This must be it.
Well, no wonder Elroy Winters smelled money when I showed him the letter. He's got to be thinking the same thing. And, he is Leon's next of kin.
But you won't find Pamela's next of kin. They're all gone. So I'm next in line. She would have wanted it that way. I was her favorite. I was...
It's not up to us.
Sure it is. We could find that money. Thousands of dollars. You could even have half.
Adolf, bribery is a crime.
Give me the letter. I'm the one she trusted. I helped her get away with...
No, put down those scissors. Come and drop them. Now, Adolf, look. If I hear from you one more time, it won't be the post office you're dealing with. It'll be the police.
Hey, you're running late, George. I was just sorting today's mail for you.
Oh, thanks. I had an errand to run. I'd better hit the streets right away.
No, hold on a minute. I wanted to talk to you about that old letter from yesterday.
Why not? That's all I've heard about lately. Yeah, you can give it to the dead letter office.
Oh, trouble?
No real trouble. Tracking down the parties involved has just proved impossible.
Yeah, well, one of those parties actually called up the post office.
Who? When?
Yesterday afternoon. Fellow named Elroy Winters.
Oh, yeah. The brother of the addressee. He was pretty upset that I wouldn't give him the letter.
Well, it's no problem. I told him it was normal for you to try and return it to the sender. What's the big deal with this letter, anyway?
Someone hid some money back then. A lot of money, evidently. And now everyone figures this letter has the key.
Oh, boy.
I started out thinking this would be fun to show up with a letter 40 years later. I figured I'd be a hero, but now...
Stop worrying, George. It's not that important. I called the main branch in Johnstown this morning, and they said we can give it to the next of kin. And that makes it this Elroy character, right?
Right. Well, I'm glad that's solved.
You want me to hold it until he calls again?
Give it back to me. I'll take it on my route. If he's at the house, I'll hand it over and be done with this mess once and for all. (laughs) 507 South Market Street. Here we go again.
Hey, Elroy, wait. It's me, George McCready. Hold it. Hold it a minute. I need to talk to you. Mr. Winters, you're as white as a sheet. You all right?
Say, maybe we should go in the house and talk.
No, we'll talk out here. You may get in the car.
You don't look well. What happened?
I've just spoken to Leon.
What? When?
Just now. In the house. In person.
Well, you're not suggesting you saw a ghost in that house?
Call it a ghost, a vision, a dream, whatever. I just spoke to my brother.
Well, maybe there's some kids in there. I'll go take a look.
It was Leon. I saw him. He wasn't a day over 20 years old.
Elroy, if this melodrama is an attempt to scare me into giving you the letter, don't bother. I came here to give it to you anyway.
I don't want it.
You don't want it? But it's yours. Pamela's dead and you're Leon's next of kin. You're supposed to have it.
It's Leon's. Give it to him.
Look, Elroy, this is really crazy. Yesterday you wanted this letter so badly you were ready to call a lawyer. Here, will you take the letter? I won't bother you anymore.
Thank you, but no. There's nothing in that letter for me, I know.
Well, then, I'll leave it in the mailbox. You, whoever wants it can pick it up whenever you...
No, you mustn't. You've got to deliver it to Leon himself.
Okay, Elroy, as you wish. The letter goes back post office. Martha, I'm home.
Hello, dear. So, did you solve the big mystery?
Not entirely, but it no longer matters. I'm turning the letter into the dead letter office tomorrow, and that'll be the end of it.
Maybe it's just as well. The whole thing sounded a little suspect to me. But just for fun, tell me what you found out today.
And the whole story is one big missed connection. In a nutshell, rich girl Pamela meets poor boy Leon. They fall in love. Leon wants her to elope with him, leave her family and fortune, but she wants to wait until she inherits her trust fund.
How foolish.
Leon goes off to war. Pamela decides to take off after Leon. Only her ship sinks and she dies. And then Leon is killed in the war. Can you believe that?
Oh, what a terrible tragedy. Oh, George, I'm dying to know what's in that letter.
You and everyone else, except Elroy. He sure changed his tune. Thinks he saw his brother's ghost. Wants nothing to do with the letter.
Maybe he's scared.
Well, he sure looked it. But, what makes you say that?
Well, I heard some more haunted house stories. Recent stories. One of the girls from the church circle lives near there.
Oh, no. Here we go with the ghosts and the monsters.
It is a strange house, dear. Nobody ever moves in. Every so often you hear tales. Lights on and off. Old radio music.
It's just kids. Elroy said so himself. Let's forget it. Go to bed. And take the phone off the hook.
Off the hook? Why? Is there something you haven't told me?
I just don't want any cloak and dagger business tonight. If someone needs to speak to me, they can visit me in my dreams. Good night.
No wonder George wants the phone off the hook. Elroy's sudden change of heart?
Martha's haunted house reports? Is this mystery closing in on our postman? Will he make it till morning and be rid of this curse once and for all? We'll find out how it all ends in Act 3.
Staying on the road with Quaker Stay.
Quaker State's new Lifetime Engine Lubrication Protection Program guarantees in writing any new car engine using only Quaker State against oil-related failure as long as you own it. Quaker State, the quality motor oil refined from Pennsylvania-grade crude oil. Coverage and limited warranty details at participating new car dealers. Proof of maintenance required. New car or old.
You'll be staying on the road.
Mornings seem to start out better. You seem to go much better when you start the day together. Maxwell House and you get that good. The lights got clearer. Just Maxwell House, only Maxwell House.
A taste, a feeling like no other coffee. Always good to the last drop.
Every day, people face all sorts of tests. Driver's tests, tests at school, and every day, tests on life.
Oh, Mr. Cadwell, you're next.
Mr. Cadwell, please take a seat.
Thanks.
Are you ready for your test on life?
I guess so.
Oh, don't worry, it's only for practice. This time, that is. First question. If your son broke your favorite fishing rod, would you, A, be understanding, or B, yell at him?
Was it really my favorite fishing rod?
Cadwell, would you stab someone in the back to get a promotion?
How big a promotion?
Mr. Cadwell.
I don't know.
Well, you can find the answers at your local house of worship. That's where you and your family can learn about handling the everyday problems we all face. Religion in American life, Mr. Cadwell. We need it.
A message from Religion in American Life, the Ad Council, and this station.
Yeah. Well, thanks, and see you later.
You can count on it.
Okay, that's not a question. You can count on it. We're coming after you.
Yeah. We can almost hear you there, Dale.
Papa, come a couple
It'd be better if I
use
the actual microphone.
Yeah. come up from 20,000 leagues beneath the sea. Say hello to Captain Nemo for us.
There you go.
So Tail gets a little more intriguing there.
Curiouser and curiouser. Yes. Just a quick anecdote, if anyone's interested. Once upon a time, I was working in an office building, and I'd had a day off beforehand, and I come back to office and see a bunch of gentlemen in suits and things with badges and things, thinking, what's going on? Come to find, there was a big fraud going off in the office next to ours, and lo and behold, it was the United States Postal Authorities, their own police force. Yes, they do have the right to arrest you, their fellow federal entities, and they are armed, and they were serious. They were carting boxes and boxes of stuff out and computers. So, yes, that's my brush with the local post-awful.
Post-awful.
From the office next door, yes, yes.
Exactly.
So
if
they
you
got
ever
the bad
wondered,
guys.
If you ever wondered how busy the post office is, this is every day. Every day they receive $254.2 million. They pay out $165.3 million every day in postal employees and salaries and benefits. They process 425.3 million, process and deliver 25.3 million parcels. You could just call a letter a parcel as well. The average number of mail pieces processed per hour is 17.7 million. The average number of mail pieces processed each minute, 295,336. Average pieces of mail pieces processed each second, 4,922.
There are 167.3 million pieces of first-class mail processed and delivered, 25 million packages processed and delivered, 6,600 number of letter carriers who delivered mail entirely on foot. It's called the USPS Fleet of Foot. They have 98,630 number of address changes processed each day, 5,825 the number of addresses added to our delivery network, 12.3 million number of people who visit the USPS.com, $1.24 million spent at the postal store at USPS.com, and 235,917 number of money orders issued each day through the post office. Wow.
That's a lot of paper to push.
Yeah, absolutely.
That is a whole lot of paper.
And yet they're still in the hole.
Technically, only by law, because Congress has deemed the reason they always have to report they're in the hole, because Congress has deemed they have to have a 50-year in the future money set aside for retirement. No other organization or business or even the government does that, but they require that the post office does that. That's why the post office always is, in a sense, underwater. Not because they don't make money, but because they can't cover, or as the postmaster has said, we can't cover the retirement of people who haven't been born yet.
Wow, that's just like you just gave me a PhD. I had no clue. So that's why they're always screaming, oh, we need more money, we need more money.
Well, if they would release that 50-year requirement, it would be, you know, knock it back to 20 years or something. I think that they'd be solvent.
Yeah, I mean, it might even take a while, but at least you know they'd end up there in solvency land, we hope.
Yeah.
So
that's why they're always under.
Can you, Ben Franklin?
I have a postman. Well, Ben Franklin didn't tell him to do it for 50 years. That's a wonderful congressional idea. I have a friend who's a postal. He's retired now. But I always told him, Bob, there's about 3 days a year I envy you. The rest of the year you can have it. And that's the truth.
Wow. Wish I'd known that. I would have gotten into the Postal Service. Still might. Who knows?
Yeah, it's not too late.
Yep.
Yeah, I can drive and throw your mail. It's on the roof. It's on the lawn. It's in your dog's mouth.
It's on the lawn. Well, hey, let's toss out part three of our little ditty from CBS Radio Mystery Theater, Postage Due, and see if this long overdue letter finally gets delivered.
A Hollywood film critic once reviewed a particular comedy with this one-line synopsis. Man returns from the beyond to straighten out his financial affairs. If the plot sounds a little implausible, recall the words of our eternal optimist. It's better late than never. One thing is certain. Both that story and ours raise the same question. Do spirits really lurk about on Earth, finishing up their unfinished business? It seems that George and Martha are about to learn the answer to this and other questions.
I can't sleep.
Me neither. George, can't we read the letter?
No way. I can't do that.
But I can. I won't lose my job.
No.
I'll steam it open, take a quick peek, and seal it right up. No one will ever know.
I can't let you do that.
Oh, fiddlesticks. How about this?
The letter is right over there on the bureau. Now, suppose while you're asleep, I go over, pick, look at it from the outside. Now, is that a crime?
That's okay with me, although I can't imagine what good it would do you.
Good. Oh, my. Well, she really loved him. You can see it in the handwriting.
You should be a palm reader.
This woman's stationery. Practically transparent. All you have to do is hold it up to the light. I'm surprised you haven't done this already. Now, let's see if I hold it up at just the right angle. I can almost...
Can you see any kind of a map in it? A diagram, maybe?
No, they're just words. Dearest Leon...
Martha, I'm not listening.
Dearest Leon, I hope this letter... Oh, my goodness. Oh, George, you've got to read this.
What's wrong?
Well, nothing's wrong. It's just that... Well, do you want me to tell you or not?
No, never mind. I think you better put it back in my pouch. What's that? I thought you took the phone off the hook.
I did. Maybe it's the phone company.
Don't answer it.
George, you should. It might have something to do with, you know.
Hello.
Hello, George. This is Leon. Leon Winters. Don't you think it's time you delivered my letter? Bring it to my house. 507 South Market Street. Tonight. I'll be here all evening. No harm will come to you, George.
George? Who was that? It was Leon, wasn't it?
It can't be. I don't believe in that stuff.
But who else could call you with the phone off the hook?
It's some sort of trick. Elroy's scare tactics.
What did he say?
They said to deliver the letter tonight to the house.
Let's do it, George. We should. I can feel it.
Well, I can't. I still think it's some kind of trap. What makes you so anxious to send me over there?
Because I know it's all right now.
Why?
I can tell from the letter, from reading it. Trust my intuition.
I don't want to drive over there at this hour. I can go in the morning.
Yeah, when it's light, huh? You're scared.
I am not.
Well, come on. Now, let's get dressed. I'll drive you right now. We'll drop it off and be done with it.
Well, okay. Okay, I'll go. But not because of that call. Because I trust your instincts. What are you doing?
I'm turning the engine off while I wait for you.
Oh. Well, I'll just be a second. I'll drop the envelope in the box and come right back.
There are lights on in the house. Now go up to the door, George, and knock.
Maybe I should take a look. Might be some kids in there or vandals.
Good idea.
I'll be right back.
George, well, you scared me. Why were you running?
There's a guy inside. A young fella, early 20s, sitting in an old chair. There's a lamp and a table and a fire in the fireplace.
It's him.
But yesterday, that place wasn't furnished.
What does he look like?
Dark hair, wavy, a thin mustache, and he's wearing old clothes.
Rags?
No. Some kind of a uniform. Jungle fatigues, like an old war movie.
And he didn't see you?
Of course not.
Well, so go back. Knock on the door, George.
Oh, this is silly.
It's not, dear. He's waiting for you. I know it.
I'll be back in a minute. Well, here goes.
Don't bother to knock, George. Let yourself in. Come over here. By the fire.
Hello. I'm here because...
I know all that.
Who are you? Did Elroy put you up to this elaborate setup, the ghost business and all?
I prefer the word spirit to ghost, Mr. MacReady. Here's my identification.
Motor vehicle operator's permit issued to Mr. Leon Winters, August 1940. Where'd you get this?
A little out of date, isn't it? But I really have no need to drive anymore now, do I?
I don't believe this.
You mean you don't believe in me? Isn't that it? You're convinced that a soul can't be trapped here on Earth. Restless, waiting for something. But then, why did you come, George?
I came only because my wife talked me into it, because I trust her instincts. Look, let's get this over with. Here's your letter.
At long last. Dearest Leon. Finally. You'll excuse me, George. I'm savoring this moment.
I hope it was worth the wait.
Oh, yes. Very much so. It couldn't be better. You see, George, I had to wait for Pamela's answer. And now that I know what it is, I can finally rest in peace.
I guess I'll go now. My wife's waiting for me in the car.
No, wait. Please stay. I've only got a few minutes left. I can feel myself fading already. I'll soon be no more than a memory.
Is there anything I should do?
Just stay for a minute. It's been a lonely 40 years. Even Elroy was shy about seeing me.
Well, he comes by and checks up on this place pretty regular, no?
That he does. But he hasn't kept the house up all these years just out of sentiment. He's afraid to tear it down. For fear I'll move into his place.
You seem to know what everyone's thinking.
Not everyone. Just those near and dear to me. For example, I knew Pamela's letter was stuck in the mail chute ever since the day it happened.
Well, why didn't you read it back then?
Because a spirit can see a lot of things, but he really can't do much about it. It's sort of like you can't just take your final reward. It has to be given to you.
Wait a second. I don't understand. If you knew about the letter the day it was mailed, then you were already...
Dead. That's right.
So you must have known that Pamela was coming to meet you.
Of course. I watched her ship set sail for Hawaii, and I watched it sink to the bottom of the Pacific.
Oh, but couldn't you join her then after she died?
Her spirit didn't linger. She passed on to the next life. She had already made her peace in the letter.
And she left you behind?
Well, I had deserted her in life. I ran away and got myself killed. I robbed her of her dream, of our meeting. So I was doomed to wait. Until now. It's all kind of hard to explain, but it's really very fair.
Well, that's a comfort. But what about Elroy and Adolf and the money?
Don't worry about Elroy. He's always resented Pamela. He wanted her money as some sort of revenge. And as for Adolf, he was jealous. Remember that he was my age when Pamela ran away. In a way, he lost her to me. So the money seemed like compensation, I suppose.
But they never found any money.
There is no money.
Well, Pamela tricked us?
In a way, yes. But you'll understand everything once you've read the letter. Oh, I'm fading away now. Thank you for...
Oh, wait. Where are you going? Don't you want to take your letter?
You keep it. I'm leaving the physical world. Goodbye.
Leon? Leon? Where are you? Where? Leon, can you hear me?
Have a wonderful life, George. If you need me, you know my forwarding address.
So long, Leon. Hi, honey.
Well, you were in there forever. What on earth happened?
Yeah. This is for you.
The letter? Well, it's open. Didn't you give it to him?
Of course I did. And after he read it, he gave it back. He doesn't need it anymore.
You mean because he's a ghost?
A spirit, dear.
But what does it say?
I don't know yet. I saved it for you. Go ahead, read it.
Oh, George, I'm so excited. Dearest Leon, I hope this letter finds you well. I love you. The biggest mistake of my life was letting you go. I only wish I had realized that sooner. Smart girl.
Now, keep going, keep going.
But I had to say no to you. Running off to get married would have pleased my family too much. They'd be rid of me and claim my trust fund in the bargain. That's just what they wanted.
That's what everybody wanted, the trust fund.
But now I'm free at last. I've turned my inheritance over to various charities, anonymously.
So, Leon wasn't kidding. There is no money.
Shh, now this is the part I read through the envelope. And now my answer is yes. I'm on my way to Honolulu. I'll wait there until you can join me. I love you, Leon. I'll wait forever. Yours, Pamela.
Well, like I said, your intuition is never wrong. And now they're together. Thanks to you, Martha.
Thanks to us, George. You did deliver the letter.
Well, you know the saying. Nothing can stay me from my appointed rounds.
With George's sense of duty and Martha's sense of destiny, the letter is finally delivered. We must always be ready to obey our instincts, to follow the irresistible pull of life. And when we do, we may find ourselves doing things we hadn't thought possible. An example when I return shortly.
Honey, we're having cheeseburgers like we've never had them before.
We are?
Here's your fork.
My fork?
Yes, your
Where's
fork.
Where's my bun?
Hamburger Helper, say cheese.
I want my bun.
Help your hamburger, say cheese.
Our cheeseburger macaroni is a blend of tangy cheese, hearty macaroni, and savory seasonings that give cheeseburgers a whole new meaning.
Well, did you miss the bun?
What bun?
Boy, Harry, I tell you, all everybody thinks about these days is what's in it for me.
Yeah, Joe, you're right. Well, gotta run. I'm due at the Red Cross.
Red Cross? What's in it for you?
I teach first aid.
Oh. Picking up some extra change, huh?
No, Red Cross volunteers don't get paid. This is the 100th year we've been helping people.
100 years?
Yeah.
Wow. Hey, Harry, you think maybe there's something in it for me?
Could be, Joe. Could be.
Red Cross, ready for a new century. Some say that reality is all in the mind. This point of view can present some unanswerable questions. Did George actually deliver the letter to a spirit? Examine the facts. An off-duty mailman enters an abandoned house late at night. He clutches a 40-year-old piece of mail in his hand, torn open in a moment of emotional stress. Did he tear the envelope himself? Did he imagine the entire drama? To George, it was real. Beyond that, we can never know. Our cast included Ralph Bell, Terry Keane, Bob Caliban, and Ian Martin. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. And now, a
preview of our next tale.
International wants to come in here. And we will. We would rather come in with your blessing.
It can't be done.
But if we have to, we'll come in without it. Now, you can make it tough. You can delay us for months, even years. But sooner or later, that building will go up.
I really shouldn't waste any more of your time, Mr. Hastings.
Mr. Simmons, let me ask you a question. How much?
How much?
Well, usually it all comes down to how much. How much do you want?
Are you trying to bribe me?
Well, of course.
How dare you insult me? I must ask you to leave.
No, I was merely doing my job, and therefore it was necessary for me to touch all the bases.
Good day, sir.
This is E.G. Marshall, inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
Ghost letter? Is that what? Is that what it would be? A ghost letter?
Yeah, they got ghosted, all right.
They got the most ghosts.
Oh.
Yeah, that's even more dedication than the handlers on the Titanic. Supposedly, they were still trying to scramble to do something with the mail when the ship was going down. That is above and beyond the call of duty.
Yeah, that's for sure. Nope, sorry, got to do the mail.
Yeah, do you see any of those letters down there, Dale?
Women and children in first class mail.
That's pretty much it. Actually, skip the women and children. Get the mail.
See, it's not the microphone. I'm a Titanic survivor.
There you go. First class accommodations down there.
Yeah.
Speaking of the post successes that Dave mentioned, one particular post failure was something I just happened to peruse. It was in 2017. Former DC letter carrier pleads guilty to dumping over 15,000 pieces of mail.
15,000? Wow.
Yes.
So if it was junk mail, he should get an award.
Yes, apparently they just got, the job got too much for them, so instead of just being honest and saying, I can't do it anymore, asking for help, they just tossed it in the catch basin in D.C. It was apparently found out, and 15,000 pieces had to be resorted, regathered, remailed, and basically there were probably a lot of postal people who were going postal over one postal worker's going postal.
Yeah, there's a tongue tire.
In Cuyahoga Falls here, just a little north of Akron, again, it's a guy I knew, his name is George, and he had received Postman of the Year several times to find out that for years he hadn't been delivering junk mail. He'd been putting it in his parents' garage. And and through that time that he wasn't delivering mail, he ended up being named Postal Carrier of the Year several times.
OMG, that's wild. Okay, so maybe I should get a dub. The postal office, that's a job for me. Just throw it away.
they did not prosecute because they wanted to keep it quiet. And it's only begun because I know some people in the post office that I even really found out about it.
That's funny.
Wow.
I mean, and it's terrible, but it's funny.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. But, you know, one person's junk mail, you think, oh, this is just junk mail. And, you know, not junk mail to some people who get it.
Yeah. Because they get no other kind of mail.
I have a couple lists here, guys. These are people
who were
former postal workers that you might not have known were postal workers. Of course, we all know that Benjamin Franklin was the first postmaster general. Well, John Brown, abolitionist who really kind of started the Civil War by his taking over Harper's Ferry, Virginia, which is now West Virginia. He was postmaster in Randolph, Pennsylvania from 1828 through 1835. Steve Carell was a rural letter carrier in Littleton, I would guess that'd be Maine or Massachusetts, M.A. What's M? I'm not sure which one is M.A. Anyway, it's either Maine or Massachusetts. Anyway, he was a rural letter carrier in 1985. Bing Crosby was a substitute and regular clerk in Spokane, Washington in 1921. Mm. Walt Disney was a substitute carrier in Chicago in 1918. Novelist William Faulkner was postmaster, University MS, in 1921 through 24. Sherman Hensley, the actor, George Jefferson, he was a clerk in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and New York in the 1960s. Conrad Hilton of hotel fame was postmaster in San Antonio, New Mexico, 1910 and 1911. Harry Hooper, the Hall of Fame baseball player, was postmaster in Cibola, California, 1933 to 57. Actor Rock Hudson was a substitute letter carrier in Winnetka, Illinois, around 1947, it says. Of course, Charles Lindbergh was an airmail pilot, 1926 and 27. Samuel F. B. Morse, that's right, the inventor of the Morse code. He was superintendent of the telegraph unit of the post office. John Prine, singer-songwriter, was a letter carrier in Maywood, Illinois, 1964 through 1969. Guy we featured not long ago here, Newt Rockne, football coach, was a substitute and regular clerk in Chicago, Illinois, from 1907 through 1910, and Vice President Adlai E. Stevenson was first Assistant Postmaster General, 1885 through 1889. And Noah Webster, lexicographer, was a special agent in 1793. Those are the people who worked in the post office. I also have a list of people who never worked for the post office.
Oh, gosh. This is going
to
be
the Marvelettes, who were always begging the postman to stop, never worked for the post office. The box tops, who delivered the letter for years, never worked for the post office. Stevie Wonder, who signed, sealed, and delivered, never delivered for the post office.
Yeah.
Shocking Blue, who wanted someone to send me a postcard, shocked me by never having worked for the post office. Marcy Playgroid, who had Sunday mail, never played with the idea of working at the post office. Lemonheads had a postcard, but sucked at applying to work at the post office. The Bare Naked Ladies, who had another postcard, never worked for the post office, probably because they wouldn't put a uniform on. And although Harry Chapin mailed an entire person in mail order Annie, he never even lifted a finger to deliver the mail at the post office. But yet there were other notables who never worked for the post office. Kevin Costner, who did The Postman in 1997, never did any work for the post office. Newman, who barely delivered a letter on Seinfeld, never delivered a letter for the post office either. Cliff Clavin, who delivered more strange facts than letters on Cheers, never delivered a line for the post office. And the voice who says, "You've got mail," never actually delivered one piece of mail. And J. Jack Nicholson, who always made the postman ring twice, never chopped his way into the post office. There you go.
There you go. With a little polka music, no less.
A little polka music, yes.
I wonder, can you mail quiches through the mail?
I don't know. It's legal to mail food through the mail if you do it in a certain way, I think.
I mean, if you join the Cake of the Month Club.
Yeah, there's restrictions
right.
ever since, I don't know, the last several years as to sending food. You have to take many precautions. Well, no, they
yeah.
don't want you sending
yeah.
something biologically bad, you know, because weirdos do, you know, bad people get a hold of cool things and screw them all up.
Yeah.
That's true.
For us normal or semi.
But that's all I had. We used to ball my paper. That's all I had.
Yay.
Nicely done. Thank you. Thank you for sharing. Educational, everyone. You do learn something here.
Yep. We still
and,
have a little bit of time.
Oh, yes.
We do.
Yeah. We do. Oh. Spin the wheel, anyone?
What?
We could do that.
Hey, Dale, I think it's your turn to go spin the wheel.
You're going to make
yeah.
me get off my fat butt and spin the wheel, huh?
Yeah, as soon as you swim up to the surface.
Well, fine. Let me give it a tug.
Around and around she goes, and where she stops, nobody knows.
December 11th, 150 B.C. Hannibal crosses the Alps. Bob and Ray was there.
Oh, hey, where are we supposed to be heading to?
I don't know, but I don't like it. Hannibal says we're crossing.
Oh, he does he?
What kind of a silly idea was it to bring these elephants with us? It ain't
know.
Bad enough to walk your lawn, but you got to push elephants too.
That's a lot of extra trouble for me. I wouldn't mind walking over the Alps.
I'd be okay if the elephants wanted to go, but they don't want to.
Hey, let's call Hannibal over here. Maybe we'll make him change his mind.
Hey, Hannibal.
Yeah?
Hey, do you really want to go through with this?
What do you mean? You don't want to go through with it?
I mean, why do we have to cross the Alps, you know?
Well, come to think of it, let's take a vote. Eddie?
Huh?
Harold?
Huh?
Julius?
I don't think so, no.
Well, if all you fellas are going to turn back, I guess I'll go with you.
Okay, let's turn the elephants around, fellas. We ain't going to go over the Alps.
How about three?
150 B.C., December 11th. Hannibal changes his mind and doesn't cross the Alps. Bob and Ray was there.
Okay.
We are so educational tonight. It's unbelievable.
Bob and Ray went there when Hannibal didn't cross the Alps. Something.
I feel as though I've just earned a PhD.
Yep. The things you
deeper?
Learn around here.
Oh, my.
Time for
well,
a tune.
Maybe CW's got a wooden nickel to throw in the jukebox. But.
As a matter of fact, I do have an elm tree that happens to also masquerade as a coin, with your kind permission.
Please do.
Absolutely.
There we go.
In my heart, and there
it shall always remain. My love is like a clinging vine, clings a little closer all the time. Through the years, joy and tears, all the same. I've got that old-fashioned faith in my heart. No changes can tear it apart. If all the dry land changed to sea, it would never make any change in me. 'Cause I've got that old-fashioned love in my heart.
With you next weekend. That's right, Friday 8:30 Eastern. It's the Damon Runyon Theater. Let George Do It and Suspense and More. CBS Radio Mystery Theater next Saturday.
Ooh, practical jokes.
Yep. Indeed.
Jokes on you.
Oh.
We're going to be on here live.
Thanks, Fogg, for being there.
Yep.
And all the people that aren't seen, right, Dale?
Yep. Then what we can't see, we kind of see you, sort of.
Yep.
Thanks for joining us, and more fun next week. Sadly, no Gar tonight, but maybe he's got it running a repeat. Check it out.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
And her.
When next we meet in Frankenstone. Don't come alone.
You know,
we love you, Vince, but quit forgetting about CW. Jeez.
Ew, I'm getting all touchy about that.
Yeah.
We'll have to find a clip where Vince says her and slide that in there.
That would be great.
Yeah. There's got to be some sound bite. He did tons and tons and tons of work.
True.
Yeah, must be there somewhere.
I can change my name to Lenore when he does the Raven poem.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but then you got to change your letterhead, you know. I don't know. That's a lot
of
work.
Yeah, there's that. There's legal and stuff, yeah. Yeah, we'll just take her or she.
Always paperwork. Always.
Or she, yeah. Now you got me thinking. I have to try and find that.
Yeah, or you can just it doesn't have to be anything fancy. Just Supreme Commander of the Cosmos. That'll do too.
I wonder, Dale, if we might find that in the hands of Mr. Otomo, that he and Claude Rains did.
Possibly.
Yeah, I'll have to go searching.
I love that one. Yeah, Claude.
Oh,
Rains. That is a great story.
Yeah. What was it called again?
Called The Hands of Mr. Otomo. It was other stories have kind of put it out there, but with Claude Rains and Vincent Price on suspense, it was just absolutely a wonderful, wonderful story.
Yeah. It was kind of a twist ending, sort of.
Yeah. Because they led you to believe one thing and then, oops, it wasn't.
Yeah.
Hmm.
A crime sort of, almost, you could almost call it a horror tale in a way.
Well, yeah, it was about a mass. It's more almost a Jack the Ripper type story.
Yep. And we played it way back on February 24th of 2017.
Wow.
2017. Gotta look that up.
Yeah, we had just started with Erie House Old Time Radio.
Wow.
We're about a month and a half into it.
Well, that's a good way to kick off the series of old radio programs, that's for sure. That and Arch Obler, and I think we had a Quiet Please in there early, and Thing on the Formal Board. And
of course, you remember the very first story we played, don't you, Dave?
Ooh, it was
very scary.
Poltergeist.
Yes.
Poltergeist. Oh, my goodness. Oh, what a scary, scary story. Thanks, Arch Obler, for all the sleepless nights I've had.
Well, that's a really good tale. We were going weekly until March of 2017, then we started going two nights a week. And we've been running with that ever since.
Running and running away from the authorities, one step ahead of them.
Almost on show number 600 of Erie House Radio.
Wow.
Tonight is what, 597, I believe.
Wow. Well, thanks for letting me
Could be.
Hitch on to your wagon.
Well, thanks for being here.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd call it wagon hitching. It's more of adopting someone who belonged.
Yeah. Adopting people. Yeah, that's true.
Adopting or abducting, same difference. But
yep.
Same results, anyway.
There you go.
Oh, that's right. Next show will be April Fool's, hence the practical
joke. Oh, yes.
Yep.
Wonderful. April Fool. Yep. Ah, such a fool guy.
Got to get to sneak in another one of your Damon Runyon theaters for that one, Dale.
Oh, I love those.
Broadway.
What's his name in Broadway in that?
Broadway, yeah. John Brown.
Yeah. He played so many characters I like. He was Digger O'Dell.
But Yeah, just on he was O'Reilly's neighbor, and he was Digger Odell on that show.
Oh, that's right. He played both.
It's amazing. He played both, yeah. Mm-hmm. He was his neighbor Gillis, who he also worked with at the airplane factory.
Oh, I did not know that. I mean, I know that Digger Odell. I mean, that's just classic shoveling off.
Mm. Oh, yep. He was a great character.
And I think he also played it Digger Odell on the television as well. He didn't play Gillis, but I'm pretty sure he played.
Was there Digger Odell on the TV? Now I have to look those up.
Was he? Gotta look that up.
Trying to teach the dog the joys of the Three Stooges, but I don't think he gets it.
That's why you have cats.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, cats definitely don't appreciate slapstick.
Except when they're slapping you in the face.
No, you would never do that to kitties.
No, the kitty would do it to you. I mean,
oh, yeah,
slap
definitely.
In the face. Feed me. Slap in the face. Pay attention to me. Slap in the face. Yep. I'm here. Worship me.
That is
Did
all
I
they
tell
want.
You to stop?
It's just to be worshipped, and they're good.
Did
Not
I tell you to stop?
Yeah, I know. Not a huge ask.
Yeah, you know, when they plop right in the middle of your keyboard and say, no more keyboard, just me.
Yeah. They know what they're doing.
Joe doesn't do that. Could be laziness, though, on his part.
I don't know. You've been having difficulty with your microphone. You sure someone doesn't come out at night and does something with the microphone and walks off and just lays in the corner laughing? Ha, ha, meow. Ha, ha, meow.
Possibly. I hadn't considered that. I just can't believe
it.
Joey, you wouldn't do that to me, would you? Joe?
There is... Ah, that silence says volumes.
Yes, it does.
Gentlemen, I must be away. So, with your kind permission, I think the man known as the Schnozola is motioning to take it away.
Very good. Have a great week.
Good night.
You as well. Thank you. Good night.
Night.
You said good night.
Don't forget your scuba gear.
What for this sake, but good night. We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Arrivo, up we the day, and
ink-a-tink-a-doo.
Good night. Good night. Good night, folks.
Okay.
And good night, Mrs. Calabash.
Wah, 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 wah.
Do you mind turning off the radio?